Chapter 1: The Science of Social Psychology and Examples of Theories in the Discipline. An Introduction to Social Psychology. Social psychologists, like all scientists, sometimes just collect data. Such data might simply serve a descriptive purpose, or serve to develop new hypothetical models or confirm or disprove existing theories. However, social psychology is very different from the hard sciences, which is true of all the human behavior sciences. This difference will be seen in the following paragraphs. In the human behavior sciences, including social psychology, there is not always a known or clearly apparent cause for a specific phenomena. Very often there can be multiple causes for the same phenomenon, as evaluated in different individuals. Even the same individual can demonstrate the same behavior under different circumstances for entirely different reasons. The same behavior pattern can develop in two individuals as a result of entirely different types of learning. As will be seen in the last chapter of this book, Chapter 19, the causes of human behavior phenomena as explained by a general model of socio-cultural learning, learning is involved with all, or almost all, types of human behavior. Thus, as will be demonstrated in Chapter 19, if we look at human behavior phenomena from the level of various types of learning, the conclusion is that the behavior is the result of learning. However, if the problem is examined from a different level, there are very often multiple causes for the same type of behavior. This can involve different types of learned behavior patterns and different motivations. This multiple causality is typical of very complicated systems, such as human beings, societies, computers, and ecological systems. The type of multiple causality I am discussing here is generally not present with the simple systems that the physicist and chemist work with. A specific chemical reaction generally takes place for the same reasons each time it is carried out. However, human beings can respond in the same way for many different reasons. This can be very confusing to the human behavior scientist that does not have an understanding of very complicated systems. The confusion will even be worse if they attempt to think in terms of the relatively simple approach used by the hard scientist working with atoms and molecules. In social psychology, there may not be any single theory that successfully explains the cause of certain phenomena. This even happens in the hard sciences. That is, something might happen when a certain set of factors are present, but we may not understand why it happens. For example, if we drop a ball, it falls to the floor, but there is no precise explanation of why this happens. We know when it will happen, and even how long it will take the ball to fall a given distance. This is predicted and mathematically described by Newton's law of gravity. However, the theory does not provide a cause and effect relationship in terms of dynamics. That is, there is no explanation of why an object falls. Such theories can be called descriptive theories. They describe what happens, sometimes in precise mathematical terms. The same is true with certain theories in the human behavior sciences. They describe what happens, without an explanation of why it should happen. However, usually there are some human behavior scientists who will offer hypothetical causes for the phenomena described by descriptive theories. In the physical sciences, it is relatively easy to develop general theories, which apply to a wide variety of conditions. This might be less true in social psychology and other human behavior sciences. There is very often no general theory that can successfully explain the phenomena associated with human behavior. However, there may be a non-general theory that can explain or at least describe a specific phenomenon, such as helping behavior, aggression under specific circumstances, etc. These theories are called middle-range theories. This can be restated as follows. Middle-range theories deal with specific aspects of human behavior. The positivity bias is essentially an example of a middle-range theory, because it focuses on one aspect of human behavior, which is a tendency for people to evaluate others positively. This theory is also an example of a descriptive theory. The theory is used as an example in the following paragraphs and it is explained below. The positivity bias. The positivity bias, also referred to as the leniency effect or person positivity bias, is a tendency for people to evaluate others more often in a positive way than in a negative way. Question: is this theory really correct? I believe it is most likely to be correct in certain situations, which perhaps is a disagreement with the established view. That is, it probably is not universally true in all psychological, social and cultural contexts. A more scientific and accurate statement is the following. Under certain psychological, social, and cultural conditions, people have a tendency to evaluate others more positively than negatively. These conditions will be discussed toward the end of this text. Question: what are the causes for the positive evaluations? If we can successfully answer this question, the nature of the theory will be advanced from a strictly descriptive theory to an explanatory theory. There are most likely multiple causes for positive evaluations, which are not necessarily the same for different situations and different people. One or more of the following 10 factors may cause a positive evaluation in a specific situation. 1. Evaluating people positively can avoid conflict and result in rewarding interactions with others. Evaluating people negatively can get a person into trouble, especially if the evaluation is toward an individual with power over the evaluator. However, even evaluating a peer or an inferior negatively can bring significant undesirable consequences for the evaluator, in many situations. An example can sometimes be seen if a young man implies that he is not attracted to a young woman on the first introduction. The results can be extreme hostility and a statement implying murder hurled at the man. In general, people who evaluate others negatively might be more inclined to get into conflict and have great difficulties making friends and keeping their jobs. Even if the evaluation is done in total confidence, there is always a chance that the evaluation will be revealed intentionally or accidentally to the individual that is evaluated. Thus, it is generally a common sense idea that it is safer and wiser to present positive evaluations of people. We learn to think of people in a positive way to avoid negative consequences. On a conscious and unconscious level, we associate a negative evaluation of another person with a potential penalty inflicted on us. We also learn that a positive evaluation will bring rewards, such as a smile, a date, friendship, cooperation, assistance, and even sometimes a raise in salary. Too many of us were taught from childhood to be positive thinkers. Most of us were told about the power of positive thinking. This notion is incorporated into practical psychological theories that the layman is exposed to. Positive thinking is also preached in the form of various religious doctrines. Positive thinking in relation to other human beings is taught to most people in the developing years. Thus, the individual might evaluate people in a positive way based on the above idea. 3. We sometimes evaluate people positively because we like them and or empathize with them. This is most likely to be the case if there is some chance that our evaluation might have some significant consequences for the person being evaluated. Examples where this might apply are on the job and in social situations where new friendships and mates are being sought. 4. We take pride if we think of our relatives and friends in positive terms. This positivity reflects on our own qualities, which makes us feel good. Negative evaluations of relatives and friends can have the opposite effect. It is a reflection of our own negative qualities. For example, if our relatives have good qualities, we may think that our family, including ourselves, are very cultured, wise, and have a good genetic heritage. 5. People select out and interact with people they believe to be positive and reject people they think are negative. Thus, the people they form relationships with were first evaluated positively and then relationships were formed. People that are evaluated negatively, especially on successive interactions, are not likely to become permanently involved with the individual. Thus, we often evaluate the people that we selected positively, because that is the reason we selected them in the first place. 6. We sometimes evaluate people positively simply because we are accurate and realistic. There are many people we encounter that truly have positive qualities. There are many highly moral people in our society. There are also many people that work many years advancing themselves academically and/or socially. These people and other hard-working, gifted, and talented individuals may be evaluated positively simply as a result of an accurate evaluation. This is not a bias, but it is important to understand that some positive evaluations are truly accurate. 7. We are motivated to see certain people in positive ways simply because it is reassuring to do so. It can simply be reassuring to think of a partner, our doctor, friends, professors, etc., in positive ways. We depend on such people, and if we evaluate them negatively, it might result in a considerable amount of worry and anxiety on our part. If people we depend on are inadequate, we certainly do have something to worry about. Thus, we think of them in positive terms and may focus on their positive qualities. Even if we are fooling ourselves, the positive beliefs might still reduce our worry and anxiety. Perhaps this is not really functional in the long run, but that is not the point of this discussion. 8. People sometimes inadvertently or intentionally fool themselves that an individual has positive traits because they must work with the individual. If we are forced to work with someone, it might be more pleasant if we think of them in positive terms. If we think of them in negative terms, we are likely to say and do the wrong things, which will result in conflict. Many of us have simply learned a wise strategy to deal with people we must interact with who have negative qualities. We simply try to think of them in positive terms, focus on their good qualities and ignore their negative habits. This facilitates harmonious actions and statements from us, which will result in a more pleasant situation than would be possible otherwise. 9. People sometimes evaluate others more positively because of a positive halo effect. When a person has one or more truly positive traits that are apparent to others, there is a tendency to evaluate other aspects of the person positively. For example, if a person is very physically attractive, he may be evaluated as more honest, loyal, sociable, pleasant and intelligent than he really is. This of course will result in more positive evaluations than negative ones. 10. In general, it is probably more pleasant to evaluate people positively. People feel better if they are in an environment with pleasant things, including other people. As a result, human beings tend to evaluate everything more positively, according to Boucher and Osgood. This is called the Pollyanna principle. I do not believe that this so-called principle is really totally correct under all psychological, social and cultural conditions, but it is sometimes quite true. Hence, people may evaluate things positively because it makes them feel good, which facilitates more positive evaluations. Note: one can find more factors than the above, but the 10 factors adequately explain the tendency to evaluate other human beings positively, under certain psychological, social and cultural conditions. The 10 factors on the list are all associated with some type of learning. We learn from an emotional and intellectual perspective to evaluate people positively under certain conditions. We learn that there may be some type of punishment if we evaluate negatively. We learn that positive evaluations of others may bring rewards. Many of us were taught to think of people in positive ways, especially people we like. We learn that we must not reveal negative things about our family in public, but it is okay to talk about positive things. We were taught what are positive and negative factors, and we learned to feel good about the positives. We were taught to select our friends and potential mates based on certain criteria which relate to positive evaluations. We learned that some people have positive traits and truly deserve a positive evaluation. We also learned that it is often wise and productive to evaluate people positively, even when such an evaluation might be unjustified. We inadvertently learn that one positive trait should be associated with another, which is really an example of an unconscious emotional type of learning. And we learn to fool ourselves, which is often done unconsciously with positive evaluations under some conditions. Thus, the above can be summed up in terms of learning theory. Question: is there a negativity bias also? Most of us who have had any experience with people are aware that people often evaluate others negatively. This does not contradict the positivity bias, as the theory is described above, because the psychological, social and cultural conditions are different for negative evaluations. However, there is a negativity bias also. A more scientific and accurate statement is the following. Under certain psychological, social and cultural conditions, people have a tendency to evaluate others more negatively than positively. Thus, we can ask the same questions that were asked with the positivity bias. What are the causes for the negativity bias? This will advance this idea from a descriptive theory to an explanatory theory, just as was the case with the positivity bias. And once again, we are dealing with a very complicated system that involves the human mind and the behavior that flows from it. This suggests that the causative factors are probably multiple in number, as was the case with the previous example. Thus, one or more of the following factors cause negative evaluations. 1. Negative evaluations can be the result of frustration with relatives, friends, and employers. Very often people who we are close with or people who have power over us, such as employers and parents, cause a considerable amount of frustration. This frustration increases the amount of negative evaluations of people in this category. 2. We might evaluate a person negatively simply because they really do have negative qualities. Negative evaluations can be the result of the evaluator being accurate and realistic. Most people have at least some negative qualities and some people have many. There are many individuals in our society who are not intelligent, who have psychological deficiencies and who are immoral. Thus, negative evaluations can be the result of an accurate judgment. Sometimes accurate negative evaluations are meant as feedback for the person being evaluated, such as a dance instructor assisting her students with constructive criticism. None of the above is a bias, but it is important to understand that some negative evaluations are truly accurate. 3. Negative evaluations can be the result of knowing an individual well enough to be aware of his or her negative traits. When we get to know someone well, we learn about their negative traits. This can increase negative evaluations. 4. We might evaluate people negatively simply because we do not like them. People that we do not like, whatever the reason is, might be negatively evaluated by us. 5. Negative evaluations are sometimes the result of a specific type of prejudice. In our world, there are many varieties of prejudice. People make negative judgments as a result of race, religion, gender, age, sexual orientation, country of origin, and many other categories. Most people fall into at least one or two categories that will result in prejudicial responses from some people. Thus, prejudice can account for much of the negative evaluations in our society. 6. Negative evaluations of others are often facilitated by jealousy. If someone similar to ourselves outperforms us in an area that is related to our own goals or self-image, we may evaluate them negatively. We might underrate their achievements and focus on their negative qualities. 7. Many of us were taught from childhood to be critical of others under certain conditions. Most of us were taught to be critical of our own shortcomings and the weaknesses of others, especially when the deficiencies can be remedied by effort. As children, most of us were taught to stay away from certain people with moral or psychological deficiencies. This critical philosophy often leads to negative evaluations of other people. 8. There are many people in our society that were taught to look at the negative side of things. Many of us were brought up in difficult environments and were taught that life has many negative elements. The idea was that if these negatives were ignored, the individual is not being realistic or is not in touch with reality. This negative philosophy is probably more prevalent in poor and working class environments. However, the point is that the philosophy is applied to the evaluation of people and results in more negative evaluations. 9. The evaluations can be the result of the forked tail effect. When a person has one or more truly negative traits that are apparent to others, there is a tendency to evaluate other aspects of the person negatively. For example, if a person is grossly unattractive, he or she may also be seen as unfriendly, hostile, dishonest, vicious, and lacking in intelligence. This is called the forked tail effect. It is a type of halo effect that involves a negative halo, which facilitates negative evaluations from others. Thus, one apparent negative can facilitate additional negative evaluations, which may not be accurate. Note: one can find more factors than the above, But the 9 factors adequately explain the tendency to evaluate other human beings negatively, under certain psychological, social and cultural conditions. The above 9 factors are also essentially the result of learning, just as was the case with the factors for the positivity bias. We learn that certain goals and situations are desirable, and we may be frustrated from obtaining them by parents or by our boss. We also learn when to be frustrated with people. We learn what constitutes a negative quality. Getting to know a person and his negative traits is a learning process. Knowing a person well enough not to like him also involves learning. We learn to be prejudiced. We also learn to be jealous, directly and indirectly. Directly by learning certain values such as monogamy and indirectly by developing a self-image and learning about what we want to have and achieve. We are taught to be critical of others, and some of us are taught to be negative toward the shortcomings of people in general. We inadvertently learn to associate apparent negative traits with other negative qualities, even if those qualities are not really present. The above can essentially be summed up in terms of learning theory, just as was the case with the previous set of factors for the positivity bias. Question: can the positivity bias and the negativity bias be combined into one general theory? We can combine the positivity bias and the negativity bias into a single theory that is more general than either, as follows. Psychological, social, and cultural conditions will influence people's evaluation of others. Under some conditions there will be more positive evaluations and under other conditions there will be more negative evaluations. I will call this model the theory of negative and positive bias. Now I will return to the question of what conditions affect a person's evaluation of others. In the following discussion, all of the possible conditions cannot be discussed, but some important conditions are explained. The psychological conditions: there are many psychological conditions that will facilitate either positive or negative evaluations of people. The personality of the individual is one primary factor. Some people simply learn to be more positive and others more negative. The mood of a person is also a factor. Most people in a good mood will evaluate people more positively than when they are in a bad mood. A happy, well-adjusted person will evaluate much more positively than a depressed person. Another factor that influences the number of positive and negative evaluations is the psychology of the listener. The listener can consciously or inadvertently facilitate either negative or positive statements from the person that is talking to him. Some people simply do not want to hear negative statements about others. And of course, there are people that are just the opposite. The listener will make his interests known by body language, such as facial expressions, as well as verbal maneuvers such as changing the subject. The social conditions where we are most likely to evaluate people positively are where the positive evaluation has no negative consequences for us, or where a negative evaluation might lead to some type of penalty for us. These situations include circumstances where we have no choice of the individuals we are going to interact with, such as the professor we obtained for a specific subject. A negative evaluation in this situation might get us into real trouble, and a positive evaluation might even help us get a good grade. This is even true if the evaluation is anonymous, because it might be accidentally or intentionally revealed to the instructor. The same situation can also apply to the work environment in relation to other employees as well as the boss. In many experimental conditions, using paper and pencil evaluations, there is no consequences in providing the experimenter with positive evaluations. The positive evaluations might even make us seem well-adjusted and cooperative. In general, any type of survey, whatever technique it incorporates, including questionnaires and interviews to obtain information, there is nothing to lose by giving positive evaluations. And most likely that is just what the subjects of experiments do in many cases. In social situations where there are significant consequences for us, based on our evaluations of others, there is likely to be relatively strict evaluations, which can result in more negatives. For example, if we are choosing an employee, a potential mate, or even a friend, our evaluations are likely to be less positive and stricter, especially if we have many choices. In such situations, it can cost us considerably if we make unrealistic positive evaluations. If we are talking to a friend, relative, or therapist we trust in a totally private situation, our evaluation of people will probably be more negative. However, if we are talking to anybody in an open social setting, such as a party, our evaluations may be more positive. We might complain to a close friend about the negative habits of our husband, wife, kids, boss, or next-door neighbor when we are in a private situation. In a less private situation, such as the party, we might be more inclined to brag about our relatives. If we reveal negative views in private, there is not likely to be any adverse consequences, but there will probably be some negative responses from others if we reveal negative statements in the more public situations, such as in a party. In less private social situations, we run the risk of creating a bad impression or facilitating gossip about our private affairs if we reveal negatives about other people we are involved with. If we make negative statements about others in the party, we also run the risk that this will be revealed to the individual we are talking about. Thus, most of the factors associated with positive and negative evaluations under different social conditions are determined by the relative risks, costs, actual and potential gains. The above serves to guide us in our choice of being positive or negative in our evaluations. This can be summed up by decision-making theory. The cultural conditions, the tendency to evaluate people positively and negatively, most likely will vary with the specific culture and the culturally related circumstances. The many thousands of cultures throughout the world no doubt have many different norms and values in relation to how people are to be evaluated. Can the positivity bias and negativity bias be advanced into one general theory? The psychological, social, and cultural conditions will influence people's evaluation of any entity or set of circumstances. Under some conditions there will be more positive evaluations, and under other conditions there will be more negative evaluations. I will call this model the general theory of negative and positive evaluations. This general theory applies to people, objects, and situations. Of course, this theory does not imply that we evaluate everything the same way. We probably evaluate people much more generously and positively than objects. There is a special value we place on people. This can be seen from common sense experiences. For example, when a car is too old to function effectively, we dispose of it. When people are too old to function, we try to restore their function or at the very least maintain their life, even if they are useless. However, keep in mind that the above generalized theory applies to people, objects, and circumstances. A very important principle for the human behavior sciences from the above paragraphs. A very important principle for the human behavior sciences becomes apparent. Generally, a theory in social psychology and other human behavior sciences is only true under one or more sets of psychological, social, and cultural conditions. This also means that most theories in the human behavior sciences will be untrue under one or more sets of psychological, social, and cultural conditions. A primary objective should be to understand the conditions where a specific theory is true and the conditions where the theory is untrue. Ideally, the wording of a theory should state the conditions where the theory is applicable. Of course, it is not always possible to precisely define the set of conditions where the theory works and where it fails in the human behavior sciences. Person perception, a related concept to the discussion of positivity and negativity bias, is person perception. This concept deals with how we perceive, judge, conceptualize, and evaluate other people. In this brief discussion, I will focus on how we evaluate others. There are a number of theoretical models that attempt to explain how we make evaluations of people. One model is called the averaging principle. This theory implies that we put a numerical value on various traits and evaluate the person on the average value of all his traits. Another model is the additive principle, which implies that we simply add the value of all the traits. Still another model is the weighted averaging principle, which implies that we take an average but give more weight to traits we believe are important for a specific situation. This is probably the most accurate model of the three. However, I believe all of these models are poor representations of what actually takes place when we evaluate people under normal psychological, social, and cultural conditions. The models averaging principle, additive principle, weighted averaging principle do, more or less, represent what happens under various experimental conditions. Under most psychological, social and cultural conditions, we probably give different weight to the various traits that we see in people, as stated by the weighted averaging principle. However, in the real situation we might totally ignore irrelevant traits. Under experimental conditions the evidence appears that we tend to take the average value for traits, but this probably is not true outside of the laboratory. One component that makes research on how we evaluate people difficult is that it is not really easy to determine what a positive and negative trait really is. This is determined by the psychological, social and cultural conditions. For example, cautiousness can be considered a very positive trait if we are hiring an explosive expert. Most middle-aged and elderly people in our society would consider this a relatively positive trait. However, many young people would consider cautiousness as a somewhat negative trait, because many of the subcultures of young people advocate risk-taking. Young single people from some segments of our society might associate cautiousness with a fear of sexual involvement. We teach young men that they must be risk-takers in times of war. Cautiousness can be associated with the coward, in many situations that the young individual faces. Thus, none of the three models represent the very complicated way people make evaluations under normal psychological, social, and cultural conditions. Common sense evaluations can sometimes be more accurate and revealing than the laboratory research when we are studying human behavior. This will become apparent in the following paragraphs. If I examine my personal methods of evaluating people, I find I do not use any of the methods described above. Basically, I evaluate the relevant traits, giving greater weight to the more important traits. I mentally take the net value. I do not take an average value. If certain primary traits are not present, the evaluation is essentially zero, no matter what the net value is. If certain primary negative traits are present, the evaluation is also zero, even if the net value is very high. For example, if I was to hire a mathematics tutor, I would place great value on his knowledge of mathematics and his ability to explain mathematical principles. These two traits are primary, and if either of these were not present, I would not hire him. Then I would consider less important traits, which I will call secondary traits. If he also was knowledgeable in physics, I would give that secondary trait some value. If he was skilled in the statistical mathematics used in psychology, I would rate him even higher. If he was an excellent football player, that trait would not be relevant. Thus, I would ignore it. If he had a bad temper, that secondary trait would be added with a negative sign along with the other traits. I still might hire him with his temper problem, if his net score is high enough. However, if he was also very dishonest and had a history of robbing homes, I would not hire him under any circumstances. This trait is a primary negative. A generalization of the above method can be represented with the following formula. The following might be very complicated for those without a mathematical background. P1 P2 WP1 P1 plus WP2 P2 plus WT1 T1 plus WT2 T2 plus WT3 T3 1 now NB equals V. With this formula, a scale is chosen, which is used to represent the estimated value of the various traits and their relative weight. The scale must have a plus and minus range, as can be seen in the last sentence of this paragraph. For the example explained below, I will use a scale from plus 10 to minus 10. For more complicated situations, a scale from plus 100 to minus 100 or even plus 1000 to minus 1000 might be appropriate. The WP1 and WP2 are the weighted value of the primary traits. The primary traits are represented by P1 and P2. As implied by the increasing subscript, there can be any number of primary traits, each represented by a WP and AP with an appropriate subscript number. For example, one primary trait for the mathematics tutor is mathematical knowledge, which could be called P1. If he is very knowledgeable, P1 equals 10. The weighted value for this trait is fairly high by my standards, thus, WP1 equals 9. The second primary factor is his ability to explain mathematical principles. Let us assume he is moderately good, thus, P2 equals 8. This trait is extremely important, so I would place a weighted value of 10 on it. which means WP2 equals 10. It should be noted that if either of these traits were 0, the value of the equation would also be 0. In general, when one or more primary traits are 0, the value of the equation is 0. The WT1, WT2 and WT3 are the weighted values of the secondary traits T1, T2 and T3. As implied by the increasing subscript numbers, there can be any number of traits, each represented by a WT and AT with an appropriate subscript number. For example, let us assume that the tutor has a fair knowledge of physics, represented by T1 equals 5, which is moderately important to me, so the weighted value would be represented by WT1 equals 6. If he also has excellent knowledge in statistical methods of psychology, this could be represented by T2 equals 10, with the weighted value being represented WT2 equals 5. If he has a moderately bad temper, this trait can be represented with a negative sign as such T3 equals minus 7, with a weighted value of WT3 equals 6. If there are no secondary traits, the equation will still work and the value of the equation could still be quite high if the primary traits are high. Na is a primary negative trait, at Na equals NB. If a primary negative trait is present, the equation will be equal to 0 no matter what the values of the other factors of the equation are. The mathematical reason for this is the numerator and denominator of the fraction Na NB has the same value if there is a primary negative, which will always equal 1. In addition, there is a minus sign next to the fraction, which results in a minus 1. This is added to the 1 next to the fraction, which equals 1 minus 1 equals 0. The value of the remainder of the equation will then be 0, because any number multiplied by 0 is equal to 0. If there are no primary negatives, the value of the fraction Na NB will equal 0 in this formula. If there is more than one primary negative, they can be multiplied together and their product can be represented by the Na and NB terms. However, this only has theoretical value, because the value of the equation will be 0 if there are one or more primary negatives. The actual mathematics with the hypothetical tutor would be P1 P2 WP1 P1 plus WP2 P2 plus WT1 T1 plus WT2 T2 plus WT3 T3 1 Na NB equals V 10 8 9 10 plus 10 8 plus 6 5 plus 5 10 plus 6 dash 7 1 minus 0 equals 16,640. Note the 0 on the right side of the equation means there are no primary negatives, which is represented by Na and NB. The value V has meaning when it is compared to other evaluations. In this hypothetical example, the 16,640 would be compared to the score that other tutors obtained in the evaluation, and the highest score would be the best tutor. This, of course, would be based on personal evaluation criteria, because the individual assigns the numerical values of the traits that he believes are relevant to his needs. Although the above method might appear very complicated, most people probably do something very similar in their minds without a tremendous amount of thought, without actually assigning numbers to the traits, and without being aware of precisely how they are making the evaluation. The above is simply a representation of the common sense method in terms of mathematical symbols. That is, if we watch people make decisions and listen to their reasoning, we will probably find something very similar to the above under normal psychological, social and cultural conditions. However, under laboratory conditions we might find something similar to the weighted averaging principle.